Hello and welcome back to the Brady Bros Boston Sports Podcast, where we cover everything in the Boston sports world. My name is James Brady, and alongside me is my brother Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Today is Monday, September 7th, and I think it's pretty safe to say, James, that we're back. We are back. This is episode 60. Roll the intro.
No icing. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Anyways, we will start it off as we always do with the Boston Red Sox, who I think can only be described as, I've written down here, very, very bad. They are, I believe, the worst team, at least in the AL, if not the entire Major League Baseball league.
The only team that would give them a run for their money at the bottom there is the Pittsburgh Pirates. But yes, I think it is safe to say that the Red Sox will not be doing a whole lot this year, unfortunately. I'd chalk the first 25 games, maybe up to just very poor pitching. And you can stop me when you think I'm wrong here. But as we've kind of, I don't want to say solidified a rotation because we're far from that, and we have a very strained bullpen in pretty much every game. But the pitching was the main problem early on. But the bats have not been doing a lot of work. As of late, last week or so, there have been a lot of home runs by a lot of guys. But other than that, where like even if the pitchers are doing well, they are not getting the run support that they need.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we do have, for the most part, a very similar lineup to last year. Obviously, a couple of notable people missing with Mookie Betts, and then we'll kind of get into some other players in a minute here. But the bats have looked all right, but I agree. It's you know, you can score 7-8 runs, and when that's not winning you baseball games, it's not really an issue with the offense. We've had a lot of games recently where, you know, it's just we get in the hole a little bit, and then it just seems like we can't fight our way out, or we keep scoring and the other team just scores more than us, which obviously is not what you'd like to see. And it just seems like a lot of games, even if the Red Sox have a lead, they blow it. If, you know, they're getting scored on the first or second inning in a lot of games. I actually want to look up real quick, if you want to talk, how many games they've been scored on in the first inning, if I can find it.
All right, because you said something there. Yeah, I mean, the bats are getting it done. Like you said, especially like the last week or so. I think it was last night they lost 8-7. They put up, for a change, the Sox put up 3 runs in the first inning and continued to put it on after that, and it was still not enough to win the game. And when you're playing like that, you're not going to win a whole lot of baseball games. Statistically, based on win percentage, they are tied, three-way tie for worst in the league with the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Texas Rangers. Did we already go over who we lost at the trade deadline?
We have not. If you also want to start getting into that, I'm still looking here.
So the trade deadline was last Tuesday? No, longer than that. I forget the exact date. A week or so ago, though. And a couple of notable moves by the Red Sox, who dealt Kevin Pillar, Josh Osich, and Mitch Moreland, unfortunately, to various teams for a lot of picks and a lot of prospects. Not any big names, that's for sure. And prior to the trade deadline, we did part ways with Heath Hembry and I can never remember the second guy's name, if you can remind me.
Brandon Workman
to the Phillies. That was a couple weeks ago now. But if that was getting you down too much, we do have a couple of bright spots. Like I said, the last week or so, the bats have turned it on. And a very bright spot in our number one or number two prospect, I can't really remember. I think he's got to be number one at this point, or he was. Bobby Dalbec made his MLB debut about a week ago. And as of last night, he hit his third homer in the majors. So, well, it's not looking too great for the team overall. We do have a lot of young talent and potential that I think we need to focus on in Bobby Dalbec, Rafael Devers, Xander Bogaerts, guys like that who, if the Sox do kind of go into a rebuilding phase here, I think are key pieces to hold on to.
Yeah, and coming back in, I couldn't find the exact stat for how many games they've been scored on in the first inning, but I'd be willing to wager that it's about half, if not more. I mean, I think someone,
that's pretty accurate.
Someone can check me on that, and I can check after the show or whatever the problem is. But I think you bring up some good points where we did part ways with a couple of guys. Like Kevin Pillar, I was a little upset about. He's been a great force in the outfield on defense, and also his bat's been really good for us so far. In dealing one of the guys that we brought in and was looking like one of the better players on this team so far this year, dealing him away was definitely a little bit disappointing. But like you said, trading for more prospects or players to be named later, not a lot of names right now. It's looking like the Red Sox are ready to kind of dive into that couple years of rebuilding. I'm hoping it's not a massive rebuilding stage because we still have a lot of great talent, and I would hate to see, you know, more players get dealt like the players you named in Rafael Devers, in Xander Bogaerts. But we see dealing guys like Mitch Moreland, who are a veteran on the team. We've really come to know and love them in a couple of playoff runs, but just a bigger contract who can be replaced by a prospect like Bobby Dalbec. So I'm definitely thinking we might see the Red Sox sitting on the quiet side for the next year or two while they kind of try to figure things out, get that rotation back under them, and start playing some decent baseball again.
I think that's definitely where it starts. They need to add some pitching. And let's not gloss over the fact that they missed a huge PR stunt in the couple of days where Brock Holt was a free agent. I was really hoping they would pull the trigger on him. Instead, he signs with the Nationals, correct?
Yes.
I think that was a very big chance to win back over some Boston fans who are really feeling some pain this year. Anyway, before we get out of the Red Sox, just real quick, need to mention the Yankees are in third place in the East behind the Blue Jays and Tampa Bay Rays. So the Yankees suck, and so do we.
Yeah,
I think that pretty much does it for the Red Sox. Sorry, I cut you off there.
I was just going to say, if there's anything that makes being in last place okay, it's the Yankees not being in first. And also, the fact of the matter that Brock Holt was traded to the Nationals, who were playing in Fenway Park at the time that he got traded. I'm with you. It's an all-time missed opportunity by the Boston Red Sox. Bring on a guy who, he's not a big hit on the payroll. He's a fan favorite. People love him. The clubhouse presence, the energy that he brings to that team. I would have loved to see him back. Not to mention,
it would make my jersey relevant again.
We do have a history of, we could probably break that down in a whole separate episode of all the jerseys we've owned that are now pointless. Never thought a Tom Brady Patriots jersey would go out of style, but that still hits too close to home. We're going to get out of this.
Let's put it this way. If you see one of us wearing a jersey with your favorite player on and your favorite team, bad news for you.
Yeah, there's a good chance they're not staying much longer. Anyways, we're gonna get out of that because we spent a lot of time talking about a very bad team. Let's talk about a good team in the Boston Celtics, who are currently in the Eastern Conference semifinals in a series tied 2-2 against the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, and I'm going to be kind of quick here because I haven't watched a whole lot of Celtics basketball. Unfortunately, I was more focused on the Bruins when they were still in the playoffs, and we will get to that in a minute here. But I also am not a huge fan of watching the NBA. I have some kind of heated opinions about the league and the players in general. That's not to say I won't be watching the Celtics from here on out, but you know, a very strong start and going up 2-0, and it looked they looked very good. It looked like Toronto didn't stand a chance. And then you give up that game 3 loss on the buzzer beater to OG and Anunoby.
Anunoby. OG Anunoby.
OG Anunoby, pardon me. You give up the game winning shot to him. The Raptors get a game and eventually come back in the fourth game to tie the series. Looking like they have a little bit more life than we would like as Celtics fans. But the next thing you have in the dock here is how important is it for the Celtics to win game 5? And obviously, this isn't a do-or-die game, so it's not like win or go home. I think if the Celtics put on a dominant performance like in Game 1 or Game 2, and they make it very clear who the better team is in Game 5, I think that'll pretty much put a wrap on the series. Now, if you go down 3-2, though, anything's possible. You got to win 2 before they win 1. So it's definitely an important game, but obviously not. It's not win or go home.
I'm going to kind of take an opposite point of view of you, and I think you need to treat this like a game 7, like any sort of game that's a win or go home, where this is your chance to take a series lead. You can play with a cushion for one more game. You don't have to play with your backs against the wall. And I'd just rather see the Celtics team play with a series lead rather than playing from a deficit, especially when they would be, if they lose this game, one game away from elimination. I really like our chances. And this kind of gets into the next point. In the East, I really like it. But I've said before, we need to focus on getting out of this series before we focus on the bigger picture. I just would like the Celtics to, like you said, go out there, show them who's a better team. They're up against a very good Raptors team who a lot of people didn't think much of with the Kawhi Leonard trade. And you're seeing guys who made great and obviously won the championship last year with what would people would argue without a superstar. They're now playing the same level of basketball, super high caliber. They're playing very well, but I think the Celtics are able to outplay them. There's been a couple of discrepancies in these two losses. Obviously, a last-second slip-up allowing OG Anunoby to hit that three-pointer and just, I would say, a one-off situation. You're not going to see that happening a lot in these series with a buzzer beater deciding the game, I'd like to say. But in Game 4, you could see Jaylen Brown. It took him to like about the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter to hit, I believe, his first three-pointer of either the half or the game.
He started like 0 for 5 or 0 for 7 and finished like 2 for 9.
Yeah, I think it was actually his 10th three-point attempt that was his first to go. And it was somewhere ridiculous.
Really?
Like 2 for 11, I believe, was his final from 3. So even if he hits, you know, 2 more of those, 3 more of those, in what would typically be a more accurate Jaylen Brown performance, I think that was a one-off game. I'm hoping that doesn't continue. We've seen him struggle with his shooting in past years, but I think he's kind of gotten out of that. And if we have a performance where Tatum's playing like he can, Brown's playing like he can, Kemba Walker playing like he can, I don't think that there's a problem. We just need all three of those guys and obviously the bench and other support players to show up at the same time.
Yeah, and the reason I say I think that Game 5 isn't so important here is because the two games have been so close. And I mean, really, you could chalk it up to the Celtics losing Game 3 and the Raptors winning Game 4, that type of situation. And even Game 4 down to the wire, I think before the last 30 seconds or so, it was a close game. There was a chance for the Celtics to get back in it. So I think you fix just some sort of the technical issues. I think there was a little bit more Brad Stevens could have done it. The end of Game 4 there to, you know, give him an extra timeout, drop a better play, something along those lines that would have put us in a better situation. But I do like the Celtics odds against this Raptor team, and maybe we can break down sort of the East and what we could potentially see as a finals matchup next week when we know more about who's going to be where.
Yeah, so just bouncing it over to the other matchup in the East, we have the Bucks versus the Heat. The Heat are currently up 3-1. With the Bucks barely escaping elimination in an overtime win by, I think it was a very narrow margin of maybe 2 or 3 points. No Giannis Antetokounmpo in most of that game, so I don't know what the NBA aired. They probably just cut off the broadcast then, figured it was lost, and aired something else, probably old LeBron reruns or something. But I don't know what his availability is for Game 5. I don't really care personally. And
I can look that up real quick.
And just, okay. I was going to say, I personally still would prefer the Heat in a 7-game series, although they're looking extremely hot right now, no pun intended. I do think we could take the Bucks in a 7-game series. We've talked about this before, at least off air, with, you know, the close performances we've had against this Bucks team. It's just hard to compete with someone like Giannis who plays, you know, very bully style of basketball in a league that you notice the preferential treatment towards players like Giannis, like LeBron, where we watch games where Giannis had 5 fouls in the last, you know, 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, and time again was running into players, bumping into players, getting things that should have been called for fouls, and somehow managed not to foul out in a game where they ended up winning by 2 or 3. But I do think in a 7-game series, especially with Giannis's health being questionable moving forward, we could take either team. But like I said, kind of bring it back. I think we need to focus on getting out of this Raptors series before we get too crazy. But I will end it on the question as you look up Giannis's health still. Would you rather face the Heat or the Bucks in this next series if we make it out of this one against the Raptors?
So Giannis is supposedly a game time decision for game five. It's one of those situations where I think he's got a semi-serious injury, but this is the playoffs and guys like him that are top tier and top of the league, they definitely want to play. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Notably, big men do typically struggle with like ankle and knee injuries more than other people. So it could be interesting to see long term if he does come back or what the Bucks decide to do going into the rest of the series. My answer to the Bucks or Heat question is going to kind of be a two-parter in a way. I think if the Bucks are somehow able to claw their way back and win this series in seven games, but it's very close, I think almost then I prefer to play the Bucks, who are coming off a longer series and who it is very clear the Heat have exposed some weaknesses in the top team in the East. I forget if they were the top. They had to have been the top team in the NBA. Yeah, yeah.
At least in the East, I think in the NBA, yes.
Ideally, I want the Bucks to come back, maybe win another game before the Heat close it out, because I do think overall the Heat is just a more favorable matchup. Giannis is just too dominant a player, although the way Jimmy Butler is looking right now is not great. But I think the Bucks have more depth and just more of those, not star, but kind of rising star or second guys that than the Heat do, and in a way that, you know, if you can figure out Jimmy Butler, it's pretty clear you're going to handle this Heat team pretty well.
But anyways, before we move on to the Bruins, we will take a minute for a quick word from our sponsor. And getting back into it with the Boston Bruins, who unfortunately have lost 4-1 in a series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. A lot of things that we can kind of break down here. I don't want to spend too much time on it because we've also had a lot of time kind of bogged down by the, you know, news of the Red Sox and everything going on. I'd like to focus on the more positive stuff, but if you want to kind of give us your two cents on the series.
Yeah, I think let's start off, and I think it's pretty obvious that the restart and the pause this season played probably the biggest negative to the Boston Bruins in this team. With an older roster, I think some of the younger teams like the Lightning, I think the Flyers have a semi-young team, although they are out now, and I can't speak much on the Western Conference, pardon me. But we were hurt the most, an older team. I think it was a little bit harder to adapt. That being said, playing games weren't great, but once the series against Carolina came up, the Bruins did their thing. They looked really good. And I think you have it. We definitely face some difficulties in this series with Rask opting out earlier in the playoffs. And now finally, this is a long-winded answer to saying, I think the turning point was that OT winner in game two. You go into double OT and you give the Lightning a huge momentum swing in that direction. And that was kind of all she wrote. The Bruins played well, just as we've seen for stretches previously, an inability to find the back of the net. Halak looking, I would say overall, like a very good goaltender. And we've talked on this a lot. He would be a starting goaltender in most teams in this league. But, you know, he's older. There were a couple of mistakes that he made and a couple of shots that he probably should have saved. But that's on the other five guys on the ice too. So I think a disappointing exit, but nothing to get like, I don't think you need to tear it down is what I'm saying.
Sorry, a car just drove by, so I wanted to make sure I didn't pick it up. I completely agree with you. I think that that this Bruins team was definitely hurt, not only just due to the age, but the expectation heading in with a team that was just so good throughout the regular season and basically slated by the fans, the media as well, and I think our own personal expectations were. We went in with an attitude, especially after last year's disappointing finish, with the idea and the mentality that anything less than a Stanley Cup was a failure in a sense. And I know that that was at least my view, the vibe that I've gotten from the media as well. I don't know if you agree with that entirely, but
yeah, I'd say it was expected that they were a shoo-in for at least a finals run.
It was very much a win now season and just not making the type of run we wanted to. That being said, I think we stood a chance against Tampa Bay. Obviously, we kind of ended up on the wrong side of the whole series, but you go back to that OT winner in game two. You give the Tampa Bay Lightning something to cling on to instead of going up 2-0. It's an even series. They, you know, return the favor in, you know, in the package of a 7-1 loss in game three for the Bruins. And just from there, it was tough to battle our way out, and we managed, just couldn't do it. I think what game four was a 3-2 loss where the Bruins pulled the goalie with 2 minutes left and just maybe got
3-1.
Yep. Okay. But they pulled the goalie and maybe got one shot on net in the last 2 minutes of the game. Game five, just a heartbreaking end going into double OT. And my thought that entire game is if the Bruins win this, they have an incredible chance to win this series. You saw that with a lot of other teams. I think at the point that the Bruins went into game five, every single series across the East and Western conferences were all at 3-1. And actually, the Bruins and Tampa series was the only series that did not go to seven games. And I think that if you win that game five in OT, you get that same surge of energy, you get that same swing and momentum, and you have just as good a chance as any other team to push this game to seven, to this series to seven games, and make a run for the next round. But that all being said, it was a disappointing finish to this year for sure, but I completely agree with you. I don't think we're at a tear it down point. I don't think this team is out of the phase of being able to win now and be a good hockey team now. We have a lot of great, I would say, middle-aged and also young talent, some great old talent in Zdeno Chara as well, and we'll talk about him in a minute. But, you know, the arguably the best guy in the offense all season was David Pastrnak, who's 24 years old. So it's not like our talent's going anywhere. We just need to make sure we hold and lock down the players that we have that are very, very good and young.
Yeah, I think that point about the that double overtime loss was huge. It wasn't for a lack of chances. That Bruins, I would argue, absolutely dominated that first period of OT. There were maybe two or three instances in the full 20 minutes where I felt Tampa Bay had good possession in our end. So if you can limit that to a couple times a period, they just couldn't find the back of the net. And we've seen this in stretches before, unfortunately. And unfortunately, this one came in the postseason rather than the regular season, where you can kind of bounce back. And just a quick correction, pardon me, before I mentioned that game two went to double OT, it only went to single OT.
All right, yeah, and I mentioned Chara before, and we'll kind of talk about him a little bit more. So Zdeno Chara posted on his Instagram after the season saying what a pleasure it always is to play for the Bruins. A disappointing finish for sure, but basically not entirely, you know, coming out and stating it, but heavily implying, which is also, I believe, what he did last season, saying that he wants to come back to Boston to play another year for the Bruins. Your thoughts on this?
I think you'd be silly not to sign him, a guy that has been a staple of this team for so long. And you say you have, it's in the document here that you have a hot take about this, and I kind of have a guess as to what it is, so I'll kind of set you up for that. I think you'd be silly not to sign him, just a veteran guy who played... He played very good hockey. The truth of the matter, though, is he is getting older, and I think you take him back, he is no longer on that first defensive line.
Yeah, and you basically just stole it from me. I was going to say, I think you definitely, you take him back. You take him back for the leadership, obviously to wear the captain's C. That's huge. And I think he's a great player to have, especially with a lot of younger defenders in Charlie McAvoy, in Torrey Krug, guys kind of still finding their way. I think Zdeno Chara is a great presence to have on the team as well as on the ice. But you notice in these series, him getting beat a lot. A lot of the scoring opportunities came on times where we'd have four or five guys up in their zone. The puck slips out of the zone, and we go back to clear, and the Lightning or the Canes would just beat us to the puck, have a one-on-one or a two-on-one, whatever it was, coming back the other way. And I'm not going to say it was necessarily Chara getting beat a lot of those times, but in the interest of preventing that from happening a lot, I think you do look at a severe reduction in the minutes he spends on the ice. It's not that he can't have a good shift when he's out there. I think you have to take it down a notch. I think you focus on, I mean, McAvoy's the leader in ice on ice time for this Bruins team almost every single game, so you keep him out there. I think you work more on getting, you know, Torrey Krug out there, Matt Grizzlick out there, some of our better skaters, and who else was there? Connor Clifton also played very well and is a very fast skater. And I think that you work on that speed aspect of guys who can play the two-way game on defense, where you see guys like McAvoy is very great at getting the puck up, you know, through the neutral zone and into the other team's defensive zone, and just getting pucks on net, keeping the puck in the zone, and being able to also get back when the time calls for it. And I think we would love to have Zdeno Chara back, but I think you do need to look at what he brings to this team in light of giving more quality shifts over being on that first line all the time. I think you have to look at a reduction in minutes for sure for him.
I would very much agree with you. I think Matt Grizzlick would be a great partner for him. I don't know how old he is, but, you know, not so much a staple of this team, but being paired with a guy like Zdeno Chara, and Grizzlick is up and away one of our best skaters on the team, so I think that could make a good match. But again, at the end of the day, here's to hoping he comes back and finds a home for another year in Boston, because he would be just the experience and the leadership that he brings is invaluable enough, let alone what he does on the ice.
Yeah, and once again, I will end by saying I completely want to see Zdeno Chara come back for another season of the Boston Bruins. I think he's really an invaluable player to bring back, and also just a staple of this Bruins team. I think for as long as I've watched and kept up with the Bruins, he's been on the team, he's been the face of the Bruins, and we'd obviously want to have him back for as many seasons as he'd like to play, and I'd love to see him stay in the organization. That all being said, I think we're going to wrap it up with the Bruins and get into probably the segment I am most excited for in the New England Patriots. I'm nervous, but I'm excited because football is just about back, baby. We are just a few days away from the first game of the season, and then a couple more days from that, the actual first Patriots game of the season. I tend to talk way too much during this part, so Nicholas, I'll give you an opportunity right off the bat to just voice your thoughts.
I believe we said it in the episode after Tom Brady got signed with the Bucks. He wasn't traded. It is going to be a very different Patriots looking team this year, but I think I'm going to be pleasant. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised by what we have. There definitely isn't a shortage of talent. Yeah, we have a couple of holes in our lineup where guys have opted out. Completely understandable, given the state of things just in the United States and in the world. And there's just some bigger things to focus on. But I think we are going to be pleasantly surprised. I will turn this over to James now and try to cut him off at reasonable amount of times for each point he wants to make.
All right, so start off with what I have written here. The renowned fashion icon, Cam Newton, who is also slightly growing on me, despite the fact that I still cannot decipher half the things he puts on Instagram because of that stupid font he uses. But he has officially won the starting position as the Patriots quarterback for week one. I was going to ask you, how do you feel about the situation of Cam Newton being our starter week one? I think it was pretty clear to me that that was what was going to happen, and I'm just excited to see him play football. But what you think about it, and then I kind of have a follow-up question to that being, do you think we see Stidham start at some point this season?
I think, you know, there were a couple weeks there after we signed Cam Newton where everyone's like, oh, who's going to start, him or Stidham? Like, what's going to happen? And I think it was very silly to think, even for a couple seconds, that Stidham would win this starting position job, just with the resume that Cam Newton has and the upside potential of him. So, you know, not overall surprising that we see him named as the week one starter. As for Stidham starting at some point this season, I'd say, you know, if Cam Newton starts to fall off the wagon a little bit and is slipping, I think absolutely. But I think if he goes in there every week and does, you know, a pretty decent job, we have a very slim chance at seeing Stidham start the season, which is a little upsetting to me because I, as a fan and just kind of as a football lover, want to see what he is capable of for this Patriots team.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's, you look at what Cam Newton has done, and it's easy to forget due to the, you know, kind of injury bug he's had for the last couple of seasons, missing a lot of games. But, you know, 31 years old, a former MVP, took a team to the Super Bowl, infamously could have, you know, kind of helped his team out by diving on a ball, which he didn't. So maybe Bill Belichick will kind of get that grit mentality into him a little bit more and see him diving on some loose balls. But I do, I do think I am a little bit disappointed that Stidham most likely won't start at some point this season. And I honestly think that seeing Stidham start would mean something's pretty wrong with either our offense or with Cam Newton, which I'm hoping does not happen. I think we only see Stidham if we really think we're kind of starting to take a dive. Like you said, things are getting out of hand. Cam Newton's kind of falling off the wagon, whatever it may be. I don't think we'll see much of him, let alone Brian Hoyer, who we've barely mentioned at all recently, but he's still on the team for some unknown reason. But I am a little bit disappointed because you never know if this guy, you know, Stidham is going to be your next franchise guy. I kind of doubt it, but at the same time, I do want to see what he's capable of. But I guess we'll kind of have to wait on that. You never know. Bill Belichick could run some crazy stuff where he just switches our starting QB every single week and no one knows what to do with themselves. We're seeing that a lot more in different NFL teams with a multi-quarterback set, but I don't think that's really Bill Belichick's style, and I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see. Next up, we officially have our 53-man roster for the Patriots, which is now kind of in the midst of a bunch of craziness because we're constantly having people show up for practices and different people are being signed to the practice squad. We're cutting people, we're adding people. It's this time where everything's still relatively unclear, though we still do have this official 53-man roster, which interestingly enough doesn't feature a kicker.
Bill's just planning on going for two every time.
That's what I was thinking. I actually thought about this last night. Did they just go for it every single time?
I mean, do we have a punter?
We do have a punter who is also our kickoff specialist, but I don't think he's, you know, suited to kick field goals. So we have had, you know, Nick Folk and I believe it's Justin like Rohrwasser or something. I could probably be butchering that last name, but
I think Nick Folk is the favorite to be the kicker for week one, but we will have to wait and see. It'd be interesting if they just were like, you know what? If we're not punting, we're going for it.
That's like the most high school football thing I have ever heard. And also, Nick Folk, I think, is like in his mid-30s. This dude looks like he looks older than Adam Vinatieri, which is insane to me, considering how gray Adam Vinatieri's hair is. But Nick Folk just looks like he's 90 years old.
Should we talk about our week one matchup versus the Dolphins?
I'm going to quickly avoid doing that. I'm going to talk about the opt-outs really fast as we're talking about the roster, and then we'll do the Dolphins. And in terms of opt-outs, I believe the New England Patriots have actually had the most players opt out of any NFL team so far. And a lot of big names here, as we have Brandon Bolden, Marcus Cannon, Patrick Chung, Dante Hightower, a new wide receiver signee, Marquise Lee, and then a couple of other players, and Najee Turan, I hope I pronounced that right. Fullback Danny Vitale, who we signed from the Packers, who I guess is not going to play for us. And tight end Matt Lacoste. All of them opting out so far. So definitely going to be some holes on the defense with, you know, safety Patrick Chung, you know, linebacker Dante Hightower, and also on the front lines of Marcus Cannon. Missing out on this season, Marcus Cannon being on the offense as a tackle, didn't mean on the defense. But I think I'm more concerned about the defense than the offense. This has been a team with a very great defense for the last couple of years, and we're missing a couple of our staple guys. I think there's big shoes to fill. I think it can be done. I still really like who we have on this team. And quickly go bouncing back over to the offensive line, I think we're actually all right looking at who we have. And also the fact is we don't have 42-year-old Tom Brady as quarterback anymore. And I think we can afford to have a slightly weaker front line in terms of the fact that we'll have a much younger, most likely more mobile quarterback who's hopefully able to kind of, you know, work their way and manage their way out of those situations if the front line becomes a problem.
Yeah, I think you're right. You have to remember that a year ago or 50 weeks ago, this was a Patriots team or Patriots defense that was putting up just absurd numbers, not giving up touchdowns for a certain amount of games. You know, just a very strong start to last season, and now a very different looking defense and team in general, as previously mentioned. Like I stated before, though, I think they're going to find a way to get it done.
Yeah, I still think this is definitely the first time we've gone into a season, probably since 09 with Brady's injury, obviously that coming week one, where there's been just so much mystery around this team. But I'm excited for it in its own way. I think it'll be interesting to see what Bill Belichick does with this team. I think there's a huge narrative right now, which I really dislike, of who wins the Brady Belichick battle of, oh, does Brady do better in Tampa Bay or does Bill Belichick do better? Is one a product of the other? This, that, the other thing. I hope both succeed independently. But I really hope, you know, this Patriots team turns out all right. I think traditionally the first, you know, 4 or 5 weeks of this season are going to be, you know, indicative. No, I don't know what I'm saying here. I'm trying to get too fancy with it. I do think the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season will be interesting in the sense that this is usually when the Patriots still take time to figure everything out. You see them every once in a while drop a game or two that maybe they shouldn't, and in light of just really figuring out what they need to do better and then being really strong down the stretch later in the season. So I think that even in the first 4 or 5 weeks, if things aren't going exactly as planned, it isn't exactly time to burn it down just yet.
No, and another, you know, all these Boston sports teams we talk about have such potential, and I think with Tom Brady leaving, a lot of people thought this was the end of the dynasty, and it very well could be, and this was going to be the time where the Patriots needed to take a couple years and clean it up. I don't think that's the case. A lot of talent on this team, but only time will tell, of course. And are you ready to get into the actual football season now with the Patriots opening next Sunday, the 13th, is it?
13th, 1 p.m. against Miami in Gillette Stadium. I actually don't know if there will be fans there, which is probably another
hope. I don't believe Mass is allowing fans for at least the month of September. That was the last thing I saw. Could be very wrong at this point because it was a couple weeks ago.
No, I think that makes sense because I looked for tickets a couple days ago and there was nothing until the Chiefs game, which is the first game in October.
My man's already scheming. Anyway, before you get off on some sort of rant about how well we play the Dolphins at home versus how well we play in Miami, Cam Newton, interestingly enough, is 7-1 against the AFC East and 2-0 against the Dolphins in his lifetime.
That is what we like to see, considering Tom Brady actually had, like, I think the Miami Dolphins was the team he's played the worst in his career. We talk about it every year, how the Patriots somehow almost always end up dropping a game to Miami, typically in Miami, just to clarify, we're worse in the warm weather, but that could be more a product of Brady than the actual Patriots team. Who knows? Like I said, there's a lot up in the air, but week one, I think I like our matchup with the Dolphins in Gillette. I'm just, first of all, excited to have football back. I talk about this a lot. This is my favorite time of the year, is the football season, with just a bunch of games going on, a lot of exciting stuff, but I think starting off on a team that we can beat. Just first and foremost, this is a team that we can beat. We just need to play decent football. We have to be careful because Fitzpatrick will be starting as QB in Miami, and he manages
to do this. He is. I did not know that.
Yeah, he manages to do this thing every single season where he plays really well in like the first 4 games to get his contract re-upped and then sucks for the rest of the season. But, you know, this is a team that we
It's not Tua, no.
Interesting. So we will see Fitzmagic back at it for the Miami team. I can't think of a lot of big names that they've added other than like half of our roster.
Kyle Van Noy
being the most prominent I can think of right off the bat, but we talked about that earlier with a lot of the Patriots players going to former Patriots coaches in Detroit and Miami. But, you know, they have some okay offensive talent. But at the end of the day, this is a team that we can beat.
Yeah, and I think pulling an AFC matchup to start the year, especially one that is not the Bills, is great. As in previous seasons, you know, we've started against the Chiefs. I think we start against the Steelers sometimes. Teams that, I don't know that the Steelers are super strong this year, but definitely teams that would give us a harder time than an also very different looking Miami Dolphins team. So it'll be interesting. And like you, I just can't wait for football to be back.
Yeah, and also quickly to go back to your point about playing other teams in the AFC East, our next game against an opponent in the AFC East isn't until week 8, which is at Buffalo. So
wow, really?
Definitely a very good time to play, I would argue, our weakest, if not for the Jets, maybe our weakest AFC East opponent. Hopefully get a good game up in the division. And I think, yeah, going back to it, this is it'll be an interesting game. It'll be a very different looking Patriots team, but I think that they can win this game. They can definitely win this game.
Yeah, use this to build some confidence for some new guys that are coming to a new organization, especially in Cam Newton, in your quarterback, who is very clear Bill Belichick believes in. And really all we can do is hope for the best and put our faith in the Patriots organization, who I would argue have not let us down in 20 years.
Well, there's a first time for everything. Anyways, speaking of indeed, first times for anything, I don't know if this is a first time, but we want to talk a little bit about some gambling odds I see you have written here down in the document.
Yeah, this is something we've talked about previously, just you know, maybe some bets worth noting or whatever. Full disclosure, you can't legally gamble, right?
Oh, not in certain states. No, I can in certain states, but not in others.
Oh, gambling's 18.
It's 18 in some states. Okay.
Yeah, so there's this very weird thing going along where the sports gambling industry is being left up to states. Anywho, I suck at gambling is what I'm trying to say. So
you can just make that a we suck at gambling. We're both very bad.
So don't take these with a whole container of salt, like
the whole shaker included,
the whole, literally like the entire Dead Sea worth of salt, which is a lot because you can literally just float on that. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is I have a couple here that I just think are interesting or worth noting. I'm not saying put money down. I'm not saying don't put money down. This first one here, I definitely wouldn't put money down on, though. Just this is something I want to track throughout the year. Because right now the Patriots are currently sitting at +2,000 to win the Super Bowl. This is, a couple days before week one kicks off. Again, I don't think, from my perspective, that's a smart bet because we are dealing with a lot of questions as a Patriots team right now. And more will be included those questions will be answered as the season goes on. This is just something I think would be fun to track throughout the year to see if it goes up or down.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to go on our next one here. Is they're +130 to win the division, which I find shockingly good. They've given them good odds to win the division.
The only other team in our division of the four teams is the, I'm trying to find the exact, here it is, division winner. I know what I'm doing. Yeah, the Bills have better, worse betting odds or better betting odds, depending on how you think, at +120. So the Bills are the favorites to win the division.
It. Okay, so this is one where...
So I think this is a potentially smart bet as, a universally known very weak division. And yes, the Bills looked pretty good last year, and they certainly are looking decent this year. You never know what's going to happen. I definitely wouldn't put any money on the Dolphins or the Jets at all to win the division.
Or games, for that matter.
Yeah. So the fact that the Patriots are +130 could be, could make you a little bit of money.
I'd also like to point out here, I honestly think that if you wait a couple of weeks, there's a chance that you could get this with better odds, or I guess odds to win more money. I'm guessing that +130 will go up more unless the Patriots just are winning straight out of the gate and just keep on this tear that I don't really see happening.
The Bills really suck.
Yeah, that too. But interesting that I wonder, for the first time in however many years it's been, that another team is favored to win the AFC East above the Patriots, because you don't see that very often. We've won the AFC East for 11, 12 straight years. I can look that up while you talk about the next thing.
I can't even remember. Yep, and the third thing that I wrote down here, these are all Patriots-centered, obviously, but this being a Boston sports podcast. Maybe in the future we can branch out and look at some more league-wide stuff, but the win total for the Patriots has been set at 8.5, with the over coming in at -150 and the under being +123. This is another one where I think it's a less safe than the division one, but again, pretty safe to put your money on the over 8.5. That means the Patriots are, you know, going nine and seven at least. I don't remember the last time we didn't have a record that was 800 or 500, pardon me, and below. Especially, you know, we get two games against each team in the AFC East, with the Dolphins and Jets being very bad. And you know, the Patriots don't have the strongest schedule. Is that the correct term you would say?
Yeah, we don't have like the best schedule by any means. We definitely have some hard matchups, but I have it printed out in front of me now. And I do think that this team's, they're very capable of coming up with more than 8.5. So 9+ wins this season. I'm looking here, and I would, even being willing to wager, it'd be a 10 or 11 win season for this team.
Exactly. And especially if Cam Newton plays to what his potential is, and you know, some of our other guys step up, I think this is, again, a pretty safe bet that they will win more than 8.5 games.
This is also another one that I will say, if you watch those odds, if you are interested in gambling, watch those odds for the first couple of weeks, and I do think you'll be able to get some more profitable odds coming down the stretch. If it's just me personally, I think you wait for maybe the Pats to drop a game or two, and I think you can get a little bit better deal. But I do think come the end of the season, we're looking at a team that can very easily finish 9-7, 10-6, somewhere in that range, which with the expanded playoff format definitely could be enough to even hop into the playoffs for this season. Oh, and also quickly going back to what I said before about the consecutive times they've won. So they have won last year, they won their 11th consecutive AFC East division title and their 19th under Robert Kraft, who got the team in like the late 90s, I believe. So basically when Brady showed up and to now, we've almost won it every single year and for the last 11 straight in the AFC East.
All right, that's pretty much going to do it for the, you know, the little bit of gambling that we talked about. James, do you want to talk some fantasy?
Oh, would I ever. It's the beginning of the season. My team is yet to lose a game, so I can talk all I want. As the previous in my fantasy league, league loser for last year. That was a very tough blow to me, my ego, my feeling of knowing football. It hurt all of it. But anyways, I don't know if we want to do like rundowns of our teams or just different players. I'm pretty open to doing whatever. I have
a bit. I kind of wanted you to just hear mine and laugh at me for how bad of picks I made, because you're definitely the football guy out of this duo.
I did also just say I lost my league last year, but
that's true. That's true. So maybe I basically put myself at a couple steps above auto draft, and I think that's pretty fair to say. Anyway, yeah. I'm going to go real quick. This one might have been a mistake right away in round one. Dalvin Cook, because I believe he might be kind of holding out. Is that true?
He might be holding out. And also their backups are relatively good. But no, he's a relatively safe bet. He'll most likely play out this season. He's a very good running back.
I wanted Michael Thomas, but he went second. I drafted sixth, by the way, in a snake draft. So if you want to do the math out and what pick was what, go for it. Round two, I took Aaron Jones. I feel like that's a very safe, very good pick there. Round three, I took Mike Evans.
Okay. Interesting. Always an interesting bet, taking a receiver who's being thrown to by Tom Brady. But once again, Mike Evans,
he does
leading
like
the charge.
You know, Tom Brady likes to spread his receptions out. My round four pick was Zach Ertz. I wanted to kind of get a better tight end.
That's fair.
I don't know if he's it.
We're in a pretty weak tight end stage of the league right now. There's probably about top five guys, and that's about it.
And you're going to notice here that I take a lot of wide receivers and running backs pretty early, because my belief is you are able to get a decent quarterback and defense and kicker very late in the game, so there's no need to waste a pick. I don't want to say waste, because like people are taking Patrick Mahomes like second round, or Deshaun Watson was actually the first QB drafted here in the fourth round. That might not be right. Sorry, Mahomes, first pick of the third round.
Interesting. Okay.
Anyway, round five, DK Metcalf, wide receiver for Seattle, obviously. Coming
I like
out
that
of
pick.
His second year in the league. Round six, T.Y. Hilton. That'll be an interesting one, because he was definitely the leader in receptions, I believe, for the Colts last year. But, you know, Philip Rivers is in town now.
Oh yeah, that'll be interesting. Just hope he doesn't need more points in crunch time, because that's when Philip Rivers likes to let the ball fly, usually into the other team's hands.
That's great, and we love that. round 7, I took Devin Singletary. Is that correct?
Yes, running back
Buffalo Bills. Yep. Round 8, Julian Edelman, just because I always like to have a Patriots player on my...
We love him. I definitely think he'll see... I mean, he's your veteran in a core of people catching the ball. We're
pretty young.
Very young, very inexperienced.
No question he's the number one receiver on the Patriots team.
Oh, for sure, considering like our third guy is a guy named Gunnar Ochesky, so...
that's fun. This might kind of be a heated take. Round 9, I took Rob Gronkowski.
I actually like that pick. In round 9?
Yeah.
Wow. My draft, he was, I think, like top 4 or 5 tight ends picked.
Yep.
He really fell in your guys' league. That's nice, man.
Then round 10, I took David Montgomery, running back for the Chicago Bears, who I would feel like is going to get a lot of touches because Mitch Trashbitsky sucks. So
there's also BDN is also on that team, though. So if they get him out there swinging his arm.
That's true.
Or whatever it is.
His arm, for sure. yep. Round 11 is when I drafted my QB. I was going to actually go for Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills as a QB. But he was drafted the previous... he was drafted like right before I was going to take him a couple rounds previous. I took Carson Wentz, which is not really what I wanted. A lot of the good QBs were gone, but again, I'm of the belief that you can scrape by with a decent one just because they have, you know, their QBs, the ball's in their hand the most.
Yeah, and he's also a decent runner, but
yep. Round 12, I took Darius Slayton, wide receiver for the New York Jets. Round 13, I took the Ravens D. I wasn't actually going to draft a defense. I was just going to see what came up at the end of the draft, but I was like, then you got to drop someone, yada, yada, yada. So I just took like a half decent defense. Again, I don't think there's a huge deal. And I think defense is more about the matchup than the actual defense, unless you're like top one or two in the league. Round 14, my second QB in Jimmy G. Round 15, got my kicker and Matt Prater. In round 16, and this is a hot take because he's not on a team, Devontae Freeman.
Ooh, yeah. I liked the first bit of your draft. The end was, I don't know. I think the Jimmy G pick's questionable for a second QB. I don't love the defense pick with you losing a huge piece in, I believe, Earl Thomas leaving the Ravens after punching someone during a practice game. And Matt Prater was good 6 years ago when he kicked in the thin air of Denver, which he no longer does. Other than that, though, I think it'll be interesting. Yeah.
You want to take us down to your team real quick? You can kind of compare notes and then we can wrap it up.
Instead of just reading my team, because I feel like that, you know, it's only so much fun to do that, I'm going to actually point out a couple of players here. I think could be sneaky, sneaky good picks for your fantasy draft if it hasn't happened yet. Guys to target on the waivers. Maybe look for and trade some.
Hey, here you go, guys. You don't need to listen to Matthew Berry. James Brady, he's got you with the sleepers of 2020. Give them to me.
I think my first and probably the biggest one for me is going to be Will Fuller, the fifth, residing for the Houston Texans. Now, and what I would argue would be the wide receiver 1 or 2 spot. He's always kind of been, you know, just outside the spotlight with one of the best receivers in the league, DeAndre Hopkins being on the same team. But now with the big Hopkins trade to Arizona, I think this really gives Will Fuller a chance to shine, despite the signing of Brandon Cooks, who has not been the same receiver since he got flattened in Super Bowl 52. I do think he could be a sneaky good pick. That being said, Cooks maybe might kind of fit into that. If we get Cooks fitting into that wide receiver 1 spot, that might take some of the spotlight off of Will Fuller, making him a better kind of sneaky pick and not the main focus of defenses. I think, I don't know, another pick, this is just like a gamble, a complete gamble. I have nothing to back this up. Leonard Fournette, maybe. I don't know He got drafted real early in my draft, which is a huge disappointment considering that he ended up getting cut from his team and is now in the quote-unquote super team of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But maybe let him sit on waivers for a couple weeks, see how he does, and then kind of figure it out. One I'll be interested to see is Joe Burrow. I want to see how this dude does. I know he actually got drafted relatively high in my league, I think as someone's second QB, but I'll be very interested to see how he does this season. I think there's a lot of emphasis on him, and there's a really good chance they have some decent receivers there in Cincinnati, but at the same time, it's also just Joe Burrow playing for the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know. There's a couple of players, and I can kind of do this week by week, maybe some guys who... I'll talk about guys who had like a really outstanding performance, maybe guys to target on those waivers. We can kind of structure this more as the season goes on, but there you go. Basically just Will Fuller and maybe Joe Burrow. That's what I'm going with.
All right. Great. I don't have either of those guys, so I'm feeling not great.
Neither do I, if it makes you feel any better.
I'll have to see. James in a league with people he actually knows and cares about. Me in a league with complete randoms. We will see whose team does better, I guess.
Probably yours, if this is any indication of how things usually go, unfortunately for me.
James is super confident in his fantasy abilities. Anyway, that is going to do it for us guys on this show and our, I don't want to say long away to return because we have about six people that listen.
Star return. We're back. We'll go with that.
Well, we'll go with our turn. You know, it's been crazy. Just in the world, there are bigger things people need to focus on than sports in moments like this. But I think we are finally at a place where we feel we can deliver some weekly content for you guys. Would you say that's accurate, James?
I would hope so.
All right.
Basically, well, as long as football lasts.
We are going to do our best. Thank you guys so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. If you did enjoy, leave a rating. If you did enjoy, maybe just click off the podcast now. Although you made it to the end, so clearly you thought something of it. I don't know.
Who knows?
If you want to follow us outside the podcast, I'm butchering this outro, huh?
Yep.
If you want to follow us outside the podcast, our Instagram is Brady Bros Boston. Our YouTube is Brady Bros. My Twitter is Brady Bros Nick. James's Twitter is James_B_Boston. James, quickly, give me your hottest sports take of the week. Go.
Oh man, you're really putting me on the spot. Hottest sports take of the week?
Yep, it could be anything.
Giannis Antetokounmpo should not be the MVP of the league. There you go.
Wow, all right, you heard it here first.
That's more personal spite than it is anything else, but
all right, you want to take us away?
That is going to do it for this week's episode of the podcast. If you guys did enjoy it, like he said, leave a rating, leave us a comment, let us know what you'd like to do, let me know if my fantasy picks are trash and I ruined your entire season. Any of that stuff, just let me know, tweet at me, any of that stuff. We'd appreciate it, and we will see you guys next week to break down everything about the first week of football. Probably some great things to talk about, probably some not so great things to talk about. That's going to do it for us. See you guys next week.
See ya.